It's only a kick. A jump. A block. It's only a serve. It's only a tackle. A run. It's only for the fans. After all, it's only pressure. You got this. Adidas.
Major funding for On Point is provided by Liberty Mutual for all your auto, home, life, and business insurance needs. Liberty Mutual. Responsibility. What's your policy?
From WBUR Boston, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. Baseball season kicks in this weekend. For fans, it's a welcome sign of warmer days, hot dogs, cut grass, good times. For players, it's more complicated. Injured arms, up days, down days, wobbly self-esteem, and uncertain prospects, all stitched up inside tough physiques and big, easy smiles. And if you're in the minors, who knows what's coming? Pitcher Dirk Hayhurst has lived it all and knows how to tell it honestly and often hilariously. This hour On Point, the inner life of baseball with veteran pitcher Dirk Hayhurst. You can join the conversation. Have you watched Dirk Hayhurst pitch for the Blue Jays or the Padres, or in his long years in the minors? Do you wonder what that life is like? And what do you think is really going on inside the heads of the cool dudes on the pitcher's mound? You can also comment at our website, onpointradio.org, or on Twitter and Facebook at On Point Radio. Toronto Blue Jays relief pitcher Dirk Hayhurst will be with us in just a moment, but first, for a taste of the new season and the team's warming to it even as we speak, we turn to Mel Antonin. He covers baseball for USA Today, and today he is, looking at the Yankees-Blue Jays? This is a preseason at Dunedin, Florida. What do you got going there, Mel?
Well, the Yankees and the Blue Jays are preparing, you know, for their final spring training games. I think everybody's getting excited. Everybody's excited to get into the Florida sunshine, but now 6 weeks later, everybody's excited to get the season going. The Yankees are ready. The Blue Jays are ready, and, you know, it opens Sunday night in Boston, and then Monday and Tuesday, full throttle all around baseball.
So what's been the preseason chatter? What's got people talking this year? What trades? What coaches? What's hot?
Well, I think the hottest story is how is Roy Halladay going to do with the Philadelphia Phillies? He pitched in obscurity with the Blue Jays for 12 seasons, and now he's on a World Series contender. And of course, Cliff Lee in Seattle is another big story. Cy Young Award winner got traded to the Mariners. He's injured now, but how will he improve the Mariners? And so those are the two big stories. And of course, you always got to look at, you know, are the Yankees the love them or hate them Yankees? Are they the World Series favorites or not? And I think going into the season right at this point, you'd have to say that the Yankees and the Phillies are the two best teams in baseball, with the Cardinals and St. Louis a close third.
Well, who else has looked good in preseason spring training, Mel?
Oh, the Twins look good, the Minnesota Twins. You know, they always put together good teams. This year they're moving into a new ballpark. They've increased their payroll by $35 million. They're a $100 million team this year, which is unheard of in Minnesota, but that just shows you what a new stadium can do for a ball team. But the Twins look great with Joe Mauer, the returning AL MVP, coming back. The Twins signed him to a $184 million contract, and people in Minnesota are excited that the local boy stayed home instead of going to bigger markets on the East Coast, namely New York and Boston.
It sounds good. Opening day is coming up. They're staggered around the country. Where will you be watching, Mel?
Well, I'll be watching the first game, the opening day game in Washington, D.C., where the Nationals, you know, are finally, I think, going to put together a competitive team. I don't think they're going to win the division, but I think they're going to be much better, and that's good news for all the people in Washington. But Roy Halladay, the former Blue Jays pitcher, now with the Phillies, will be making his first start in the National League, and for us, that's big news.
Mel Antonin, baseball reporter for USA Today, wrapping up spring training there, joining us from Dunedin, Florida. Mel, thanks very much for being with us.
Thank you very much.
Joining us now from Kent, Ohio, is Dirk Hayhurst. He's a pitcher for the Toronto Blue Jays. He was drafted by the San Diego Padres in 2003, played in their minor league system, and then played in the big leagues for the Padres in 2008. He writes a blog for Baseball America, which used to be called the Non-Prospect Diaries. The blog is now named after his new book just out called The Bullpen Gospels, Major League Dreams of a Minor League Veteran. Dirk Hayhurst, thanks very much for being with us.
Thanks, Tom. Thanks for having me.
No, it's really great to have you. You've got quite the write-ups on your book here. They're calling you, what, pitcher in the rye of Holden Caulfield at a fastball. It'd be something like what you've got going on here. And you come right out at the top, Durek, and say this is not about drug use, about cheaters and adulterers or tax dodgers or whistleblowing. It's not about baseball's dirty laundry. So what are you telling us about?
Well, I think you can really get a grasp for what the book isn't. And so if you do some counter production there, you can find out what the book is. The book is not a saccharine sweet, feel-good, wondrous romp in Disneyland. I mean, this
no,
is
not.
A book. It's a book about doubt, and it's a book about what really happens to minor league players. I spent 4 years in the minors before I decided to write this book, and they were four hard years, and I wanted to share that hardship and that doubt, and that players are human beings underneath their jersey. We're not just automatons that live for the dream. I mean, we have to deal with hardships off the field. I wanted to show that. I wanted to show the brokenness of my life and how even a dream job like pro baseball can't fix that brokenness.
We want to learn about that. Of course, from the outside, it always sounds great. If you're playing ball, you're playing ball. If you're getting paid something for it, you're going to have people who are envious. Here's a moment from a first inning. This is the Portland Beavers with you on the mound and the Sacramento River Cats. In 08, you'd been playing minor league ball for quite a while. You can hear the sound here of Dirk Hayhurst punching out, as they call it in the game, striking out Sacramento's Travis Buck.
Got him.
See Dirk right there just locking him up. Seemed like that whole AB there for Travis Buck was kind of an exercise in futility.
You know, Dirk, from the outside, it always sounds great. There's a ballpark. There's a game going on. There's announcers. What's not to love? But we know from the book, by 2008, you were just about going out of your mind in the minors.
Well, you know, it's not that I want to say that the game is this terrible experience, because it's not. It's a beautiful experience. I love baseball. I love to pitch. I mean, it's a great joy. But I think that people from the outside of the game, as you say, they look at it and they say, this guy is living a dream. How can he not be happy all the time? I mean, he must wake up in the morning and just feel tremendous every single second. And the truth is that it is a job. It really is. It's a wonderful job at times, but it is still work. And no matter what you do for a living, whether it's pro baseball or radio announcing or sweeping the floors, it's still work, and there are good days and bad days. And you cannot take your job or your title, no matter how magic and wonderful, and go and fix personal problems with that. And, you know, I wanted to share that with people, and I wanted to be honest and real without burying somebody, because I don't think scandals and steroids are honest and real. I think that hardships
and overcoming
them are.
Oh, they're real, I think. They're real, aren't they?
Well, they are, but I think they're cheap. You know, I think someone gets hurt. You're doing somebody in, especially as a player, in order to make a buck. And, you know, we've got enough cheap stuff in the game now. I didn't want to add to that. I wanted to be honest. I wanted to show a real part of my life. And I didn't want to do it with that kind of overdone stuff.
Now you're in the majors, relief pitcher with the Toronto Blue Jays. You're on the injured list at the moment. But give us a sense of your early path. We'll get into the minors. But before you even got there, you must have had a heck of a life in baseball as a kid to end up drafted by the Padres, even to be in the minors. What was that like? What was your early relationship with baseball?
Oh, man. Baseball was a great passage to manhood for me. It was an escape in a lot of ways, and it was a joy in a lot of ways. I am terrible. I'll just admit to you, I am a terrible athlete. If it wasn't for pitching, I mean, I'd have no business in sports. I am the biggest klutz. You should see me trying to field ground balls. And for goodness sakes, do not look up my batting average. That is a joke.
So how did you figure out you were a pitcher?
Well, you know, my dad was a pitcher, and he just stuck me on the mound, and he said, this is where I want you to be. And, you know, I started throwing strikes, and then people started striking out, and I started to really enjoy that feeling, and, you know, the rest was history. And I couldn't play any other position, so I kind of got stuck there. So, you know, I'd like to say it was a dream, but it was also kind of like a last resort.
Were you the big man on campus? Was baseball your ticket? Did you think, even as a kid, I'm going to the pros and I love it, I'm the hero?
You know, I did. I was the big man on campus at Kent State University, and I did keep telling myself all the time, I want to go to the big. I want to go to the pros because you got to understand, Tom. At the time, I thought there was really no minor league system. It was just like a hurdle you jumped, and then you crash land in the bigs, and you're rich, and everyone's happy. I'm happy. Mom's happy. That is not how it turned out. So, you know, I had great dreams of grandeur when I was at Kent State and in high school, and then I found out the reality of it when I got to the minor leagues.
Well, how did that work? You're drafted, and then what?
Well, let's see. I'm drafted, and I get shipped out to this just paradise of baseball. I'm lying. It was called Eugene, Oregon, and it had this dilapidated old stadium that is like a billion years old, right? And I am changing in a chicken coop fence locker, and the shower is flooding every time we shower it out onto the floor, and it's just everything is musty and moldy, and the fans are right on top of you. They don't know who you are like you think they're going to. They must know that I'm Dirk Hayhurst. I was drafted. False. You know, I got, let's see, I'm making like $300 a month, and I signed for $15,000, and I get to go back to school, and I'm starting to think maybe I should go back to school if this is the minor league world. But, yeah, that's how it started. It was a great day, though, when I got drafted because I thought, nothing but up from here on. And then I crash-landed there, and it was an eye-opener.
Well, how did that crash – what does it mean to crash-land there? What happened?
Well, you know, I think crash-landing and the way I'm using it, it's when you dream that a job is going to be something that it isn't. Like I said, I thought that I would win this title of pro baseball player. And then all my doubt and insecurities, all my family's problems, the alcoholism, the suicide, the abuse, all that stuff would just be magically healed. Look, I'm a pro baseball player. I should be happy constantly. You know, all the problems. I will ride off into the sunset of baseball and everything is going to be good from here on out. And it was not.
It was a long trail with the Eugene Emeralds and the Fort Wayne Wizards, the Lake Elsinore Storm, the Mobile Bay Bears, San Antonio Missions, Portland Beavers, and now finally with the Toronto Blue Jays. Dirk Hayhurst is in the bigs, but it was a long road. He tells that road really compellingly in his new book, The Bullpen Gospels. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. On the cusp of Major League Baseball's opening day, we're talking this hour about the inner life of professional baseball with a veteran pitcher who fought his way from the minors to the major league and has written about it quite wonderfully. Dirk Hayhurst is with us. He's a relief pitcher, a long man for the Toronto Blue Jays, author of The Bullpen Gospels, Major League Dreams of a Minor League Veteran. He's been blogging even while he's been in the game in the bigs, has been for a while. Here's a little clip from during a 2008 game between the minor league teams, the Portland Beavers and the Sacramento Rivercats. And Dirk Hayhurst is pitching. The two announcers are bantering, you'll hear here, about his improved pitching and repeating wild stories they read on his then blog, the Non-Prospect Diaries.
And he strikes out Kevin Melillo on three pitches. Can you imagine a baseball team, a group of transvestites, and the Chicago Rush of the Arena Football League were also at the same hotel, all in one weekend? How's that for a mix?
In Salt Lake City?
In Salt Lake City.
No less. There's the humor.
Hayhurst on the mound and on the blog there. The announcer's having a little fun with that. Dirk Hayhurst joins us from Kent, Ohio. You know, Dirk, people think a lot about great players who come up out of the Caribbean, you know, Dominicans, and say, wow, it's so hard. You know, they get really focused on baseball because life is so hard. They're going to give it their all. You come up out of Ohio, and life at home, is no ice cream sundae for you either. It's awfully tough when you describe the family life behind your dreams out there on the mound.
Yeah, our family was, it was a broken experience. You know, I've tried to be honest about that in the book, but even talking about it now, you know, it was tough. It was tough to go through that. And my dad, you know, he fell from the roof of our house when I was 13, and I can remember running out to see him after I'd heard him tumble off the roof, and he's laying face down in a pool of blood, and he stares up at me, and he's gurgling and gasping, and he's like, "Just walk away, Dirk. I don't want you to see me die." And, you know, that was a really tragic, hard experience. You know, my brother took it really bad. He was older, and so he got into some bad circles and started drinking real heavily. And, you know, that the family just became a war zone. I mean, we were screaming, fighting. My dad'd be depressed, and then he'd be angry. My mom didn't know how to control my brother with my dad not there to kind of act as a disciplinary figure. Mm-hmm. And then I was younger at the time, so I'm kind of looking for an identity. And I found it in sports because I'd always have someone to tell me I did great as long as I performed. Mm-hmm. Where at home, I wouldn't always have that. And things just kind of fell apart there. And I looked at baseball as an escape hatch a lot. And I needed the praise and recognition from it to kind of go forward.
And in a way, it wasn't just an escape hatch for you. As soon as you were drafted, and maybe even before, in this tough family scene, all the family's dreams were riding on you, on your good days and on your bad days when you felt like you were going to let everybody down.
Yeah. I was the only one to make it out. My brother was fighting jail sentences and then unemployment. And then, mom was she was fired from her job. Dad was fired from his because his hands didn't work right after he fought through 2 years of paralysis. And so it's like I'm the last best hope, I hate to say. And I recognize that, and I was terrified of failing, terrified of it. And whenever I would pitch, I would take that terror of blowing it right out onto the mound with me, which you'll find out if you read this book. It would never go away. And that's why I say, the job didn't fix anything. Those problems would follow me everywhere, jersey or no jersey.
As you talk with teammates in the minors, you finally become quite upfront about it. How that terror of failing is what kind of kept knocking you back down the minors, keeping you out of the show, the big league.
That's absolutely right. I would take the mound and I'd be so worried about what would happen if I fail. If I fail, I'm going to go down or I'm going to get released or whatever. And just that kind of internal added pressure. And I'm not the only ball player that does this to himself. I mean, we all do it. But I had it, and I think I was the only one maybe not the only one, but I think I wasn't afraid to express it, And I did. I would tell my teammates I'm afraid a lot, and they'd stare at me like, fear. You can't talk about that.
You're shut up.
An athlete. Yeah, be quiet, Like we're supposed to be warriors out here, and, warriors have doubts.
You wanted to be a warrior. You even took up the kind of meditation, to get into it. If you could read a little bit for us, there's a great passage. This is back in 05. You're struggling with your game, spending a lot of hours on the practice mound, working on your breaking ball, trying to speed up that fastball, and also visualizing success through meditation. And there's a great picture you draw of this kind of it's almost a mental chant. It's this whole Valhalla that you're picturing in your mind to try and be the pitcher of power. Would you read a little bit of that for us?
Absolutely, sure. I picture myself standing on the mound in the heat of battle, with my hair being tussled by a breeze blowing purely for the sake of making me look sexy. At my feet would be the corpses of dragons and ninjas and Chuck Norris. My pecs would barely fit into my uniform and I would pitch with a huge sword strapped to my back. I'd laugh at batters as they feebly limped out to the plate, my voice deep like thunder. I would crush the hitters, see them dribbling before me, hear the lamentations of their dugouts. I enjoyed those visualizations, maybe a little too much, and would stop only when I felt like I'd centered myself, or after one of my teammates hit me in the groin with a rosin bag when my eyes were closed.
So that's what the pitcher's thinking out there, looking so cool on the mound with the wind in his hair. We never knew. Dirk Hayhurst is with us, now in the majors, a long time in the minors. He's written about it in the bullpen Gospels. We're at 800-423-TALK. And, Dirk, we've got callers for you. Suzanne LaGrange, Texas, you're on the air with Dirk Hayhurst.
Yes, hello. I'm a mental health professional, and I wanted to thank you so much for writing this book. I haven't read it yet, and I'm going to. I'm actually going to probably get it today. It sounds like you've done a tremendous amount of work, and it also sounds like you're pretty young. And I'm sorry, I don't know how old you are, but it sounds like you've done a lot more work compared to how old you are. And I wanted to tell you thank you, and then I do have a question. I work with a lot of people with addictions and problems with gambling, and I just wanted to know, is it naive to say that there's not a big problem of gambling in the minors compared to the majors or other sports?
Well, first, I'm 29 as of like 6 days ago, and second, thank you very much. I did do a lot of work. But to answer your question, you are not naive. There actually is a lot of gambling in the minor league system, a lot. And there's just a lot of gambling with pro sports players, period, whether it's card playing or whether we're actually going to the casino. And I could tell you some stories because the AAA Las Vegas Blue Jays team is in Las Vegas. And boy, whew, we take advantage of that. But yes, there is still gambling there. Even though the paychecks are rather small, they do get after it. And I think, you know, I'm no healthcare professional, but I think honestly it's because they're so used to getting that fix, that adrenaline kind of fix, that risk-taking on the ball field, that it feels like the natural thing to take someplace else to get that same fix. I don't know if that's accurate or not, but it is prevalent.
So what happens when you step from the minors into the majors if you're lucky enough to do that? Does all that just fall away, or are there, you know, is it still people carrying it right in there?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, look, we're 20-somethings. We're boys. You know, we're surrounded by other guys. We do stupid stuff constantly. I mean, there's a lot of stupid stuff in the book. Don't get me wrong. People ask me why I didn't write more deep stuff about what happens with the guys on the team in the bullpen. The fact of the matter is we're not that deep. I mean, if we were fixing the Hubble Space Telescope or doing brain surgery out in the pen, I'd write about it. But we're boys, and we do crazy things. And when you get to the big leagues, you're still a boy. Now you're just a really well financially funded boy, you know, like, so all that stupid stuff that you would do, you have a great big bank account to help fund the project. So, no, it doesn't fall away. And that's why you hear about a lot of guys getting into trouble. I mean, if you go right out of high school into pro ball, there's no maturity phase. You know, you're basically being enabled. And if you go from high school to pro ball and you make a quick jump to the big leagues, well, now you're rich and immature. Look out, world. Here I come. So a lot of dangers there.
share some of the stupid stuff with us. It's fun to read, I have to admit, and not all of it can make it onto the air. But just give us a sense of the day in and day out minor league life. You know, everybody's seen, I don't know, Bull Durham back in the day. I mean, Hollywood loves the minors. What was your day in and day out experience of it?
Okay. All right. Well, we had this guy named Lars on the team. And he had a full back tattoo of Atlas, except his particular back tattoo, Atlas, Atlas, the Greek god or Roman god that carries the world on his back.
The earth, yeah.
Right. Well, in Lars's tattoo, he had let the world fall and splatter all over the ground. And he was just basically saying, I don't care. I'm going to do my own thing, which is exactly what Lars did. So we would sit in the bullpen. And, in the minor leagues, they have these crazy mascots, anything to sell tickets. You know, it's not the big leagues, and so we don't have big name guys there. So we have mascots that ride these little motor scooters around and wave at kids and whatever. Well, the thing with bullpen guys is that I don't know where this developed, but we love to fill buckets full of water and just crush this mascot with water. I mean, just every time he comes around on his little scooter, I mean, it's just it's like an episode of SeaWorld, you know. I mean, we're blowing this guy up. So anyways, Lars smokes this guy with water. He takes it personally. He gets off the scooter. We're looking at like a full throwdown in the outfit. We're going to have a fight here between Lars and this guy dressed up as a giant buzzard.
Oh,
okay.
Yeah.
We break it up. The next night, the same thing happens again. So the mascot gets mad. While Lars is warming up to go into the game, the mascot comes back. He's about to go into the game with water balloons. He's throwing water balloons over the fence at Lars while he's on the warm-up mound about to take the game. So Lars, being, you know, a psycho who has a back tattoo of Atlas saying, I don't care, he decides that he is going to use the bathroom in the mascot's helmet before the next night's game, which he did. So anyways, I'll just stop there. But
and on we go. Welcome to the minor leagues. Oh, boy, that's just a taste. The bus rides and everything else are – well, it's as you say, it's boys playing ball. Dayton, Virginia. Ian, you're on the air with Dirk Hayhurst. Thanks for calling, Ian.
Hi, Tom. Thank you for taking the call. Yeah. Hello, Dirk. How are you?
I'm great. How are you?
I'm doing real well. Thank you. I was a 9-year minor league veteran. I spent 8 years in the Detroit system, and then last year I was in big league camp with the Cardinals. And
why not?
What I wanted to bring up was kind of an unheard of, well, it's not necessarily unheard of, all players understand this, but a lot of fans outside the game don't understand this, that there's tremendous pressure from family at home. I had two situations. One is spending all this time away from home. You're gone for summers. You miss family vacations with your siblings and with your parents and that type of thing. I find that over the holidays, when I come home from Christmas and that type of thing over the years, that I had grown apart from my siblings. And it's only now that I've retired that I'm starting to really strengthen these bonds again with my family. And then on top of that, I had two young kids. They're 4 1/2 and 2 1/2 now. I just began keeping incredible pressure on myself every time I took them out. It's enough pressure anyway, just facing a hitter in front of, you know, 12,000 people. But when I started putting extra pressure on myself, you know, realizing that I was missing a day at home with my family, and I needed to make the most of every opportunity to try and get to the big leagues and offer my family financial security, it became too much, and I started dealing with tremendous anxiety to where sometimes I'd have trouble even throwing the baseball anymore. And it eventually forced me out of the game. And a lot of people outside the game just don't realize all these external pressures that players face in addition to the on-the-field pressures.
Ian, stand by. Dirk, I mean, Ian is singing your song there pretty much exactly. It's this enormous ball of anxiety and pressure in this, what we think of as carefree game, being carried around out there on the outfield, on the infield diamond.
There is a lot of pressure, and I really appreciate Ian calling and saying that. He's absolutely right. You know, I think it's the tendency of men to say, you know, I should deal with this. I should soldier through this. This is, you know, I can't whine. I can't complain, especially in sports. You know, I'm not allowed to feel bad about it or feel stressed about it. You know, I should suck it up and, like I said, be that warrior and deal with these things. But he's right. You're gone a lot. You sacrifice a lot, Tom. I mean, you're away from your family. And yes, you're saying you're playing your dream, but there's a huge sacrifice. If you are a young parent of children, you're not going to see them. You just don't get paid enough to get your family out where you are most of the time. And when you come home, there is a separation with your family and your siblings, because when you come home, all they want to talk to you is about baseball. And you're not just a baseball player. You're a person too. You want to talk about other things, but they expect you, because the title you have or the role you play on the ball field, to talk about a certain thing and a certain thing only. You know, I don't have children, but I am afraid of what it's going to be like when I do, because I want to be there for them. And I know that there are going to be long stretches I won't be able to. And when I see them, I'm going to want to be Superman for my kids. And it's going to put a lot of pressure on me. And I think, you know that coming into this. But there is nothing like when it actually happens to you and you have to deal with it. And it's tough, and I really respect Ian for talking about it.
Ian, thanks for calling. You started blogging about this when you weren't sure that this career was going to go anywhere. You called your blog the Non-Prospect Diaries. I mean, isn't that bad PR? Everybody wants to be a prospect forever, right? If you're not a prospect, you're just going through
you're
all
a
this
suspect,
for what?
Yeah.
Right.
No, you're right. I changed the Non-Prospect Diaries because, first of all, they had these things called the Non-Prospect Diaries – or the Prospect Diaries, I'm sorry. And all the guys that wrote them would be like, I showed up the ballpark today, hit a double, drank a protein shake. Life's great, man. I love playing ball. I can't wait to get to the big leagues. I want to go home and shoot some animals or something, you know. Like, I mean, whatever. It was just this cliche stuff. And I'm like, who are they fooling? This isn't what it's like. I mean, it's nothing like this at all, you know? And so I'm like, I'm going to write these non-prospect diaries. I'm going to let everybody know right up front, I am not a prospect. I mean, who am I fooling? You can look at my numbers. They're not prospect numbers. I'm going to let everybody know that I suck right up front, and I'm going to write honestly. And then it'll be like, oh, you know, he's pretending to be great and awesome, because I'm tired of that. Like, players hate hearing other players talk about how wonderful they are. In fact, you can tell how long a player's been in the game by his ability to just say, yeah, I really sucked out there today, you know, and be honest about it, you know, and not have to be so pretentious.
And so when you began writing, what was the reaction of your teammates and others? Were they glad to see you pouring it out there, or was this family secrets?
This was family secrets. There was a huge amount of fear. I started writing, and the very first day that something got posted, I got backroomed by the management and told I'd be fired if I didn't keep it in check. And, I go back and I look at that article now, and it was trivial. I mean, I talked about what it's like to have Australian guys as roommates or something, you know, or my roommate snored and I had to sleep on the floor in the other room because he snored so bad. I mean, and guys took it like, like I was building a bomb in the locker or something. They were so upset about it. I remember hiding in my locker while guys on the team would be one row of lockers over talking about, I hate that guy. I swear if I see him, I'm going to beat him, you know, whatever. We're going to fight. Like, it was terrible. I'm a pariah suddenly because I wrote about my snoring roommate.
Ivan!
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about the inner life of professional baseball with a veteran pitcher who fought his way from the minors to the major league, the Toronto Blue Jays. Little sound right there from spring training Tampa. That's when the Blue Jays were playing the Yankees. Here's a scene from the 1988 film Bull Durham. Pitcher Nuke LaRouche, played by Tim Robbins, is freezing up on the mound. Kevin Costner plays the catcher, Crash Davis. He trots up to the mound to see what's up. Other teammates wander in as well.
Up to the plate, Junior Shockley.
What's wrong?
I'm a little nervous. My old man's here.
Your dad's here? Where's he at?
He's right by the home plate. Don't look. Don't look.
Look, he's waving. Hey, he's just your old man. He's as full of as anybody.
Hey, what's going on?
Hey, did you guys hear about Jimmy and Millie?
Yeah.
They got engaged. Can you believe that?
Excuse me, guys. I got a game to pitch here.
A little minor league action in Bull Durham. Dick Hayhurst joins us from Kent, Ohio, near his childhood. Not far from his childhood home, his book is The Bullpen Gospels. And Dirk, I wish you'd read just a little bit more for us about sort of dreams versus reality. Everybody's got those dreams. You know the reality. Give us a little reading, if you would.
You got it. People always say they'd do anything to play professional baseball. The feel of the grass, the smell of a hot dog, and all that other Disneyland bull. Don't lecture me about the magic of the game. I'm all magicked out. I've heard every cliche, read every quote, watched every Disney movie about overcoming. I know what Hollywood fabricates the sports life to look like, and this ain't it. In real life, there are no symphony scores playing in the background while we go through our moments of doubt. There aren't always coaches pulling for us or family members spouting inspirational soliloquies. Sometimes there's just you, your bed on the floor, and a mean old lady telling you to go to hell. Sure, I smell the hot dogs, and I feel the grass, but I also smell the scent of urine-splashed walls of a minor league tour bus while the coach seats digging in my rear end. I see sugar-crazed gremlins lining park fences begging for baseballs. I say no, and those cute, innocent, dreamy little faces cuss me out like the drill sergeant in Full Metal Jacket. Every 2 weeks, my minor league paycheck affords me another round of value meals, and if I stay in the game long enough, I might just make as much as the high school dropout messing up my order. I don't have a slick car or nice condo. I don't have a designer wardrobe or a good investment strategy. I've been saving away at this job for the last 4 years, heading towards my fifth, and the only thing I have to show for it is an uncanny ability to hit squirrels with snowballs.
Dirk Hayhurst reading there from the Bullpen Gospels, and you get the dream versus reality tension right away. Shenandoah County, Virginia. Kathy, you're on the air.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Yeah.
Basically, I wanted to say that he is going in the right direction. Anywhere you go, you take your problems with you. But second, I wanted to say, because I haven't heard anyone say this yet, I live in a very small county with a bunch of little tiny towns.
Mm-hmm.
And two of these towns have minor league teams in them, and we're real happy to have them.
Name those teams for us, Kathy. What are they?
Oh, one's in Woodstock and one's in Newmarket, and I'm one of those people who can't play wait, because even though I know the answer, I can't tell it to you.
Okay.
So.
But you're happy to have them there.
Bandits. I remember one being the Bandits. I can't remember what the other one is, but I do know that we do. It kind of puts us on the map.
How about it, Dirk? Little town in Virginia, or in the towns you played in all over the West and Midwest, did you feel the love?
Sometimes, yeah. I mean, some towns are different than others, obviously. But there are a lot of nice towns out there where the minor league team it feels just like a big league squad with the group of fans that are surrounding the team. They make you feel good about yourself. They like having you there. They treat you really good. I mean, I've got some great stuff about host families and setups in the book if you want to get into that.
I didn't know about host families. This is in, I think it was San Diego you write about that, where players don't have enough to pay really for a place to live. They kind of have to bunk in.
Yes, that's true. In San Diego, California, Lake Elsinore was the high A team that I played for. It's like 45 minutes north, but it's still very much Southern California. And the cost of living there is outrageous. So if you're making like $600 every 2 weeks like we are, and then you're paying dues on top of that, unless you're going to live like five people deep in a two-bedroom apartment, it's going to be a lot It's going to be tough for you to make rent and food and travel arrangements. So what the organizations do is they set up host families for you. And these host families will kind of like adopt a player program, and they'll pick you up. And this sounds really cool, but it can be really bad at the same time. There's some pros and cons to this. For example, if you are like a surly kind of player, you know, you carouse, you have a nightlife.
Yeah.
The family with a bunch of small children that picks you up, not going to be fun. Right. I mean, for either of the equation.
Right.
Or, you know, you could have that. And we're talking about Southern California here. You could have that single mom who is looking for that after-hours power hitter for the perfect roommate.
As your host family. Oh, boy. Cougar Town.
There you go. So
you could be kind of tired on the mound. You got to be careful. Brian in New Haven, Connecticut. Brian, you're on the air.
Hey, how are you?
Pretty well. What do you know, Brian?
Yeah, I know that 40 years ago I had a tryout to Montreal Expos. I was one of the ace pitchers on our high school team. Me and another kid went up to Cutcher's Boys Camp up in the Catskills, which is no longer there. And the big scout for the Toronto Blue Jays says I looked a lot like Tug McGraw. And I came back with, I wish I had his fastball. Now, your guest doesn't probably know Tug McGraw except by reference to his son, Tim McGraw, but nevertheless, I want to know if he had a favorite pitcher growing up. Mine was Tom Seaver. And also, has he read the quintessential book about this very same thing, Ball 4 by Jim Boughton?
Yeah, of course. How about it? A model growing up, Durkin? What about Boughton's book way back where he got very candid about the big leagues?
Well, my idol growing up was Greg Maddux, Trevor Hoffman. Those two guys. Loved hearing about him, loved watching him. I loved Greg Maddux because he was, quote-unquote, the professor, you know, and he always gave you this feeling he was thinking out there on the mound, calculating how to destroy a hitter, you know, and then seamlessly executing. But then I also liked Trevor Hoffman a lot because he was the first guy to – I mean, when he came out of the bullpen of the rocking sounds of AC/DC, I mean, that is an experience that I wanted to have. But to answer the Ball 4 question, no. I have not read it, and I will tell you why. I know that it's easy because I have no formal training in writing. I never took a class in college. I didn't do journalism. I wanted to share my story, and I thought, you know, if I read Jim Boughton's book, it'll just be too easy for me to rip off pieces of what he's done. So I didn't read it before I wrote this. I've since read some pieces that, you know, they say, oh, this is very similar to this and this, and so I check it out. But I didn't want to be the next Jim Boughton. I wanted to be the first Dirk Hayhurst, and I thought I would be safe if I stayed away from his stuff and tried to focus on my own. I did talk to Jim Boughton about this book, and you've got to understand every baseball player who writes a book and goes looking for blurbs shows up at Jim Boughton's doorstep with their hat in hand and their book. Please read this. Please comment.
Well, I mean, he wrote hot stuff back in the day. Mickey Mantle's alcoholism and the whole thing. It was a big deal, his book.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Mm-hmm. And, you know, he was at a different point in his career, too. I mean, he was at the end of it. He had made a lot of money, and he was looking to get out. And that was me. I'm trying to stay in as long as I can, you know. I wasn't trying to get buried. So
So when you went to him for – did you go to him for a blurb? What did he say?
I did. I went to him for a blurb, and he said, I like the way you make the guy sound. Sounds real. Don't let those editors clean it up too much. You're a baseball player. But he didn't give me a formal blurb, but he gave me great advice, and I took it.
That's a good pat on the back. Harrisonburg, Virginia. Thomas, you're on the air, Thomas.
Hey, Derek, question for you. Hypothetical. You've got a senior in high school who's got a good left arm, comes from a reasonably wealthy family that really money's not an issue. Does that kid follow a scholarship to an ACC college, or does he sign a minor league contract for relatively chump change?
Oh, I think that question answers itself. I would absolutely go to college, and I'll tell you why. Even if you do sign a contract for, let's say you sign a contract for $100,000, and you do make it to the big leagues for a year and your arm blows out and it's over. So in your lifetime, you know, after taxes, you make your – I don't know, $350,000. And to a lot of listeners, that probably sounds like fantastic money. But college enriches you for the rest of your life. The education that you get from it will make your earning potential increase vastly for the rest of your life. You will not make money for the rest of your life because of baseball unless you're one of the absolute greats. And I'm talking a 10 or 20-year career with just outstanding accolades. So go to college, get the life experience, you know, suck up that maturity and then leave with a degree that guarantees you to earn something even if baseball doesn't work out. Dreams are great, and I encourage people to chase them, but there's no reason you can't chase them and hedge your bets with a strong education. And if you're going to go to an ACC school, you're probably going to come out of there a more polished and more successful pitcher with an education, and you get another chance at the draft.
There's advice. Take it to heart, Thomas, for your young friend. You finally got to sit down with Trevor Hoffman, who had been your idol, your model, great relief pitcher, you know, what all-time, I think, leader in saves in the major league, likely Hall
correct,
of Famer.
Correct.
And he kind of endorsed this baseball isn't everything view of the world.
He did. He did. The first time I sat down with him, I tried to force him to respond to me that it was, you know, baseball is this divine power and it can answer all questions. That kind of backfired and I got embarrassed. But the next time when I had kind of came to the conclusion that it wasn't everything, you know, he sat down with me and he said that people tend to put us on pedestals and we are just people, just like them. And they get disappointed in us when we don't live up to an unrealistic expectation. But it's not ours to live up to. It's ours to be ourselves. And we can be heroes in this platform, sure, but anybody could be a hero. It's not the job title. It's the integrity of the person who has that title. And he didn't say it quite as eloquently, but he said it very similar to that. And I will never forget those words. And they are definitely recorded in this work.
And there you are, suddenly, you know, in the locker room, in the majors, hearing it from a childhood hero. And sort of puts it all in perspective. Memphis, Tennessee. William, you're on the air.
Hi, I appreciate the taking the call. First, mm-hmm. I wanted to say we have a team here in Memphis associated with the Cardinals, the Redbirds.
The Redbirds.
Yeah, and I've always enjoyed watching them. However, I will read your book, but just listening to you, whenever I go now, I will look at pitchers particularly a little bit different and take them as people rather than the guy's just out there having a blast every day. I did want to say this or ask this. You know, with all of the difficulties that you've mentioned so far, family, trials and tribulations on the road with minors, it would seem that that would be a huge confidence buster. But you obviously, in the position that you have as a pitcher, that's a paramount thing that you, I would think, have to have. How did you maintain that?
That's a great question, William. Thanks. Dirk?
I didn't. That's the simple answer. I really had a hard time maintaining my confidence. And I maintained it like someone who was told, you have to maintain this. You know, you've got a great chance. You're living a dream. You better be happy. You better go out there and get it done. And watching everything fall apart at home, man, it's hard to go out there with the right mindset. It is tough. I mean, the game is very much mental. And I didn't always have it together mentally. And I didn't put it together thanks to a symphony score or a, you know, inspirational speech. I put it together by hard realization, by getting my butt kicked, you know, and kind of picking myself back up from the ground after I fell down. And then something happened. And I don't want to tell you exactly what it is, but I want you to know I had a turnaround. I had hit rock bottom. And I just decided, you know what, I don't care anymore. If this doesn't work out, I don't care anymore. There's got to be more to life than this. And I will show you how that happened in the book. And this is not a shameless plug, but I just don't want to give it away. And I don't think I can do it justice in a 15-second roundup. But you know, I came to that conclusion that I've got nothing to lose. I've got nothing to lose. If this doesn't work out, I can look at myself in the mirror and be okay. I don't have a choice, and I'm going to be all right. So, confidence is very important, and that you're right to bring that up. And if anything, I'm just glad that when you look at pitchers out there on the mound, you're not going to think, oh, man, I didn't get my money's worth out of this ticket.
William, thank you for your call from Memphis. Let's go to New York, Southampton, New York, and Mick. Mick, you're on the air with Dirk Hayhurst.
I've always been sympathetic to the plight of the minor leaguer, more so now hearing about your book. But I'm not nearly so sympathetic to the major leaguer with the multi-million-dollar, multi-year contract who doesn't think it's necessary to run out ground balls to short or bust it when he hits one in the gap. What do you think about that?
Well, you know what? I'm not sympathetic either. because usually I'm in line for a win or a loss when that happens. So I'd appreciate it if he did that too. But I do think we have to understand that, you know, an athlete at that level is making what the market bears. You know, it's not his fault he's getting paid top dollar. I mean, he's worked for that, and he's achieved it. And, you know, and I hope someday maybe I'll pitch that great that I get paid that much. I do understand the fans' expectation of a person in that earning bracket to do their job, to do it well. You know, we all go to work with struggle. We all go to work with problems. Absolutely. And you know what? It's just a lack of maturity to go out there and let those problems affect your ability to perform your job. You know, we have to be able to separate both of those things. So I understand you. When you say, you know, it's disappointing to watch somebody not play the game right, yes, it is. But I also know we've all had days where we've been unable to separate our life from our problems. And if someone's having, you know, I mean, if someone's family member tries to commit suicide or something like that, and they're just not feeling themselves out there, regardless of what they're paid, I think, you know, we need to have a little mercy on the guy. Now, if he's just being a fat, lazy oaf, well, then you give it to him. I give you my full blessing to cheer your hearts out and him to run faster.
And they do, as you report. You made it onto the Toronto Blue Jays, what, since last year? We just got half a minute here, but does everything change? Do the heavens open and angels sing when you step into the majors, or do you carry the same baggage on there?
Well, sort of. The Sky Dome opened, and it was similar to heaven, I'm told, in Canada.
Yeah.
No, the challenge, the everything did not change. My perspective has always been what changes things. It doesn't matter where you're at. It's your perspective that makes the difference. And when I got there, my perspective changed, and it's been great since.
Well, Dirk Hayhurst, it's great to have you with us. Pitcher in the Rye, we hear from a reader from King Kaufman in Ceylon. The book is The Bullpen Gospels, Major League Dreams of a Minor League Veteran. Dirk joining us today from Kent, Ohio. It's been wonderful talking with you, and we're grateful for your time. Good luck getting off the injured list. Good luck with your season there. Thanks a lot, Dirk.
Well, thank you very much. That was my pleasure.
A lot of fun. Listeners, thanks for joining us. You can continue the conversation. Get the On Point podcast at our website, onpointradio.org. And follow us on Twitter. Find us on Facebook at On Point Radio. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.